This is LBC London News.
Very good afternoon to you. Wednesday the 31st of August. This is Chris Golds with you on Drive. 23 minutes past four right now. And let's go to the United States, or to be more accurate, to Mexico. That's because Donald Trump is heading to Mexico City for a hastily arranged meeting with Mexico's president. The meeting will take place just hours before Mr. Trump is due to make what is his campaign saying will be a major speech on immigration. Of course, one of the big questions will be, is will he use an autocue? Will he stick to that script? Joining me now live from Washington is someone who doesn't need an autocue or a script, is our correspondent Simon Marks. Very good afternoon to you, Simon.
Chris. So
first of all, why Mexico and why now?
Well, I think because really he's under enormous pressure in a couple of different ways. I mean, first of all, he's under enormous pressure to clarify what his policy is on immigration. He has, over the last week or so, really diluted it and seemed to have gone very wobbly on things that he said in the past about building a wall between the United States and Mexico, deporting 11 million illegal immigrants, perhaps even breaking families apart in that process. So he's under pressure to clarify where he stands, but he's also, I think, very eager to try and demonstrate that he is able to travel to Mexico, meet the Mexican president. That's the kind of thing that the president of the United States, after all, has to do on a fairly regular basis, and emerge as the kind of statesman that American voters can envisage leading the United States from January of next year. His campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, put in an appearance on NBC's morning programme a few hours ago, and she conceded that this is indeed a bold move by a Republican presidential candidate who has previously described Mexican immigrants to the United States as criminals, murderers, and rapists.
It's a decisive presidential move. He wants to establish a conversation with a neighboring country, a leader, and also to discuss the common problems and challenges that our countries face.
So you listen to those Republican campaign managers and strategists and they'll tell you, well, this is just Donald Trump showing that he's got presidential mettle, despite the dreadful blood that exists between him and many Mexicans on the other side of America's border with the United States. He can ride above all of that. He can rise above all of that, fly into Mexico City and hold a face-to-face meeting in which he will hold his own, they say, with the Mexican president.
Simon, what's at stake for Donald Trump today? I mean, not just in Mexico, but with his speech on immigration coming up in just a few hours' time.
There is an enormous amount at stake for him because many of his core supporters, and bear in mind he's going to be making this speech at a time when the polls show that Donald Trump is way behind Hillary Clinton in the race for the White House this November. Many of his core supporters are themselves now deeply confused about where he stands on immigration. Some conservatives have even started referring to him in social media posts as Amnesty Don. They are worried that, like President Obama, he is veering towards a policy that will grant amnesty to some of those 11 million Hispanics who are living in the United States illegally without the paperwork that they need to live here in the United States. And of course, Donald Trump's core conservative supporters have been attracted by the message that he's promulgated up until now, that he plans to build a wall, that he plans to deport them. If you go to Trump campaign rallies, they're constantly chanting his supporters, build that wall, build that wall. They're worried that he's gone wobbly on the issue. He has to persuade them in a few hours' time when he makes that speech in Arizona that no, he's still standing firm and is very tough on the issue of immigration, but he's also got to find a way of reflecting concerns that some Republican congressmen in key battleground states have. This is Congressman Sean Duffy. He's from the battleground state of Wisconsin, and he says that Donald Trump's proposals to deport 11 million illegal immigrants simply aren't politically viable.
I think it's foolish if he doesn't change that policy because it's impractical. You can't arrest and deport 11 to, you know, 20 million people, those who are here illegally. But what he should stick with is making sure we secure our border and enforce our laws on the border.
So Donald Trump's got a tightrope to walk because on the one hand, he's got to reach out to those core supporters that want to see him continuing to adopt a very, very tough line towards those 11 million people here in the United States. On the other hand, he's got to find a way of reaching out to people like Congressman Duffy who say, look, you just can't engage a deportation force forcibly to remove 11 million people from the country.
Simon, I should just ask you, you were in Mexico City, if I remember, a couple of weeks ago. What's the mood there about Donald Trump and the things he said about Mexicans so far on the campaign trail?
Well, I mean, it's very heightened and it's very emotional. On social media, just in the last few hours, Mexicans have been urging President Enrique Peña Nieto not to meet with Donald Trump, saying that he's not welcome in Mexico. Remember, so many people signed that petition saying that Donald Trump wouldn't be welcome in Britain if he tried to set foot in Britain. The Mexicans feel even more strongly about the issue. Here's a sample of public opinion from the streets of Mexico City.
Insane person for all the world.
He's a racist.
He wants us to go build a wall.
No, he have a wall in his head.
And many Mexicans are very fearful about the fact that their president has agreed to meet with Donald Trump because they're concerned that it suggests that he, President Peña Nieto, who is becoming increasingly unpopular himself in Mexico, may be seeking to assist Donald Trump politically. So the former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, said within the last couple of hours that the only politically viable thing for the Mexican president to do today is to put either a substantial flea in Donald Trump's ear or kick him out altogether. The Trump campaign, though, insists that this is about trying to establish an ongoing dialogue between Donald Trump and Mexican officials. Here's what Donald Trump's running mate, Governor Mike Pence, had to say on Fox a short time ago.
He's going to begin a dialogue about issues that we differ on, issues that we're going to insist that they come to the table on, but also issues of common interest. This is a great opportunity for a current world leader and a future world leader to begin to sit down and begin to establish the kind of relationship that will enable us to have a dialogue about all the issues that we're dealing with.
The problem with all of that is that by the time this meeting is over, it may not look like such a great opportunity either for Donald Trump or for the Mexican president.
Well, let's turn our attention to Mrs. Clinton, Hillary. A new poll today, bad news for her. What does that say?
It is absolutely terrible news for Hillary Clinton. It's another one of these developments on the campaign trail where you would say if she was running against anyone else, if any of the other Republican candidates had triumphed in the primary process as opposed to Donald Trump, she would be in very deep political trouble. The new poll out a few hours ago says that 56% of Americans now dislike Hillary Clinton. They have an unfavorable view of her. That is a record high for Hillary Clinton, or low, depending on how you look at it, since polling began over a quarter of a century ago about whether Americans liked or disliked her. And it seems that the polling numbers have been very heavily influenced by a whole series of difficulties that she's encountered over the last few days, including most recently the issue concerning her aide, Huma Abedin, whose husband, a former Congressman Anthony Weiner, has been in all sorts of trouble again here in the United States for at least the third or fourth time relating to lewd activity that he's engaged in via text message with a woman who is not his wife. They've now announced that they're separating. But Huma Abedin is very close to Hillary Clinton, and that's cast something of a shadow over the Clinton campaign over the last few days. But this issue of Hillary Clinton's unpopularity, I mean, again, if she was up against anyone else, you would say that it's potentially fatal for her politically. But because she's up against Donald Trump, for the moment, she continues to be between 5 and 7 points clear of him in the polls, depending on which poll you look at.
So she is still ahead.
She is still ahead. She's lost some of the ground that she won after the Democratic Party's convention in Philadelphia. Right after the conventions had ended, she was between 10 and 13 points ahead of Donald Trump in the polls, again, depending on which one you looked at. She's definitely lost ground in the last few days, but equally, she's definitely clearly ahead of him.
I was reading that she's facing fresh allegations concerning her use of email when she was Secretary of State. I suspect she thought that was all over, but do you think that's feeding into the new poll numbers?
Yeah, it's very much not all over. 15,000 emails have been identified by the FBI as being emails that everybody previously understood Hillary Clinton had deleted, and indeed it appears she had deleted them, but she'd sent them to people and they've been recovered by the FBI from the people who received those emails. They're all going to be released over the course of the next few months. How many of them will be released before Election Day, we do not yet No, the New York Post is reporting today that there is evidence to suggest that Hillary Clinton continued sending classified information by email even after she left the State Department. That would be illegal if it was proved actually to have taken place. And one of the problems that Hillary Clinton has got is that she's so dogged by this issue, she hasn't held a press conference. It's been over 267 days, I believe, since Hillary Clinton has sat down with reporters and talked to them. And Clinton officials keep being asked, when is she going to hold her next press conference? Well, up until now, she hasn't deemed it particularly useful to her to hold a press conference because she's been riding high in the opinion polls and she's managed to do that without talking to reporters. As things get tighter between her and Donald Trump, will she need those reporters? She knows that if she sits down in front of them, at least initially, every question that she gets will be about email.
Any word yet on what's happening with the TV debates?
Oh, September the 26th. Make a date in your diary, Chris, because you and I will be on the air. I will be in Hofstra University in New Jersey, where the first TV debate is due to take place. Donald Trump, since you and I last spoke a couple of weeks ago, has stopped intimating that he won't show up. He's been preparing for the debates, I have to say, with a rather curious crew of characters. The former mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, an ultra-conservative talk radio host here by the name of Laura Ingraham, and the now somewhat disgraced former head of Fox News, Roger Ailes, who had to quit under a cloud with various sexual harassment allegations being made against him just a few weeks ago. Those are the three people Donald Trump has chosen to prepare himself for that first TV encounter. He's also said he doesn't want to find himself too immersed in policy details and doesn't want to overly prepare because he thinks shooting from the hip is what has got him this far on America's campaign trail, and he's ready to go into that lion's den with Hillary Clinton and shoot from the hip when he gets there. So, at the very least, we're going to be in for some entertaining television. Whether it proves to be a particularly useful or substantive conversation for those Americans who have not yet made up their minds. One wonders almost how many Americans haven't made up their minds, but for those who haven't yet, we'll have to wait and see what the debate actually contains.
It's going to be fascinating stuff, I should say. Suspect there will be some fireworks on stage between
Definitely.
Those two. Just finally, Simon, top aide to Hillary Clinton's claiming that the Kremlin is actively funding UKIP. Any evidence to support that?
Well, if there is evidence to support it, she has not presented it. This claim was made by Neera Tanden. She's quite a prominent figure here in Washington, D.C. She's the president and chief executive officer of the Center for American Progress, which is a think tank here in Washington that is absolutely allied with and loyal to the Democrats and particularly to the Clintons personally. She's given an interview. It's a bit of a throwaway line in an interview that she's given to the website Politico, in which she says that everybody knows that the Kremlin is actively involved in funding ultra-right political parties in Europe, like she says UKIP and like she says Marine Le Pen and her political party, the National Front, in France. But she doesn't offer any details to support that view. UKIP, of course, has hit back and has said that any suggestion that they're receiving Kremlin funding is only voiced by conspiracy theorists who don't know the truth behind UKIP's financial backers and financial basis. But certainly the fact that she's put this into public discussion here has raised eyebrows, and we, and I suspect many other people, are trying to reach out to her to understand exactly what basis she has for making the claim that she's made.
It's certainly not a friendly campaign so far, is it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, there's nothing, there's, you know, we are so far beyond it. Certainly in American presidential terms, we are so far beyond the kind of civilized, rational, educational, civic exercise that might have existed, I suppose, back in the 1950s or 60s, perhaps, but certainly is not existing in any way during the course of this presidential election campaign. And, you know, obviously UKIP has become something of a presidential political football here since Nigel Farage's appearance alongside Donald Trump last week, which was derided by Hillary Clinton. She actually used Nigel Farage's name in one of her speeches, saying that Donald Trump shouldn't be spending any time with people like Nigel Farage. And it just demonstrates the kind of political forces with which the Trump campaign is allied. So, you know, UKIP has become a political football here, and Nigel Farage has become, certainly last week at least, one of the players on the field.
I mean, that was odd in itself, wasn't it? Because Nigel Farage, nobody could get him to say that he would actually support Trump, only to say that he wouldn't vote for Hillary.
Well, I'll tell you what I think is odd about it, and that is the fact that Nigel Farage was at the Republican convention in Cleveland, observing it. Last time I saw Nigel Farage in person was at 2 o'clock in the morning, where he and his colleagues were enjoying a very late dinner and a beer outside a bar in Cleveland after the Republican convention had come to a close for the evening. And, you know, Republican conventioneers didn't really know who he was. He didn't make a speech. He didn't put in a personal appearance at the convention with Donald Trump. And at the time, that seemed somewhat odd, because if you were Donald Trump and you were going to play the Nigel Farage card, given that you were so desperate for compelling speakers at your political convention, you'd think that he would have played the Nigel Farage card in prime time on American television during the convention. So it was slightly odd dynamic there. Then fast forward 2 or 3 weeks, and suddenly Donald Trump is describing himself as Mr. Brexit, suggesting that he's going to bring, you know, the Farage, you know, what Nigel Farage brought to Britain during Brexit, Donald Trump is going to bring to America as this presidential election campaign. Why they didn't do this in Cleveland is very unclear to me, because that would have been, I think, a far more effective moment politically to wheel Nigel Farage onto the stage.
Well, should we get the opportunity to ask Nigel? We'll certainly
be interesting to know.
Absolutely, it certainly would be. Simon Marks, our US correspondent live from Washington there. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Simon's weekly podcast about the presidential election, all the to-ing and fro-ing and all the coming and going on that race for the White House. And that's, in fact, the name of the podcast. It's called The Race for the White House. So you can find it online at lbc.co.uk. You can subscribe to it there. It's also free, and it's out every Friday. So only 48 hours to wait for that.